Hello, listeners. This is Lee Price.
This is Will Ford from Football 365.
And you're listening, smartly, to At the Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast, although I would describe it as the Chelsea FC podcast.
It's in a pocket of space. Anderson came and didn't get there. Chance for Chelsea. Goal for Chelsea. Kai Havertz in the Champions League final. And Chelsea take the lead in Porto.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to At the Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast, your number one source for all things Chelsea. In our final episode before Christmas, we are breaking down the League Cup victory over Brentford, where the next generation of Cobham talent took centre stage. We also bring the festive spirit with some Christmas-themed questions. Now, here are your hosts, all the way from the UK, Mikey Burf and Chris.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of At the Bridge Pod. This is our final episode before Christmas, and not only that, but it's our 150th episode. I mean, I'd love to play some Cool in the Gang right now, but I don't have the copyright for that, so that won't be happening. But with that, we have to settle for a question. And that question is, Burf and Chris, Die Hard, is it a Christmas film?
Yes. Yes, it is.
to be fair, it's going to be watched tonight when I've had my dinner, so I'm like, yes,
it
tradition.
It is another question. I want to answer your question with another question. What's the best Christmas film?
Oh, see, I like, if we're going old school, Christmas Vacation. I do love that. I have to watch it. But if we're going new school, I do like Arthur Christmas.
Ooh, Chris?
I do like Muppets Christmas Carol, to be fair.
I think that's a terrible shout. But
I didn't like
it.
But...
It's got to be Elf. It has to be Elf, sure.
I don't like Will Ferrell. That's the problem.
Oh, what?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm not a fan. You know, I can swiftly change the subject and go, I watched 8-Bit Christmas last night, which is Neil Patrick Harris, and it's his story about getting a Nintendo for Christmas, and it was really, really good. It came out this year on HBO, and it's actually really good, I promise you.
I can't say I've ever heard of it, but
it's not,
I haven't heard of it.
It's a new Christmas film that's not dreadful, compared to when I saw Home Sweet Home Alone, which is, oh my gosh, it's an abomination.
I think if it's not the first two Home Alones,
it's
then it's
so
not
bad.
Home Alone.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's so bad, this Home Sweet Home Alone. It's like, no.
Home Alone is another good shout, actually, for best Christmas.
Home Alone's a very good shout, as is Die Hard, actually.
It is a cult classic. I know, listeners, we said we'd be releasing an episode a bit earlier, but we were able to get together this Christmas Eve night, and we will be reviewing the Brentford game and looking at the Academy stars of tomorrow that we're featuring. But first, it's time for that another round of Who Is That Former Blue? Now, Bertha said in recent weeks it's been quite difficult, so I've changed this week. The player for us, though, he played for us in 1921. No, I'm joking. This player was not born, though, in December, so that theme is not happening. He was part of our iconic 04-05 Premier League winning squad. He played in the 02 World Cup and Euro 2004, and he's played with Pauletta, Christophe Dugarry and Danny Murphy twice. Yes, he's been fortunate enough to be on the same team twice with Danny Murphy. Any ideas yet?
Can you say the names again?
Pauletta, Christophe Dugarry, and Danny Murphy twice.
Dugarry.
Poor guy.
No, I have no idea.
Oh, fair enough.
No, I don't think so.
Well,
a bit of a
with
tease
that,
there, Chris. He's like, ooh.
Oh, no. I think everyone will get it when I drop the extra clues at the end, but we'll see. With that, though, heading straight into that newsroom, see what the latest is at Stamford Bridge. Another week, and there's some news to get through. So for the final time this year, to the festive elevator of Chelsea news, Cesar Azpilicueta wants to stay and fight for his Chelsea place despite the Barcelona interest. Chelsea are considering whether to cut Saul's loan deal short, and it's believed talks have already taken place. Chelsea winger Hakim Ziyech has not been selected by Morocco for the upcoming AFCON. Tuchel has identified Ruben Neves as a man he wants to bolster his midfield. Willian has confirmed he's a Chelsea fan. Chelsea are considering a move for Everton left-back Lucas Digne. They're also considering a £30 million move for Barcelona full-back Sergiño Dest. Any major incomings, though, in January would be a case of summer targets becoming available. Jules Koundé is one of those, as he remains our leading defensive target. And Chelsea still expect Andreas Christensen to sign a new deal at the club, with Thiago Silva and Azpilicueta like to be handed one-year extensions. Anything from that particularly standing out?
I actually remember me saying on this podcast at some point that Lucas Digne would be, or Lucas Digne, however you want to say it, would be a good shout for us at left back. And now I feel quite cool.
Cause you feel vindicated here, don't you?
Yes, and now if we do get him, I'll feel like some sort of
Super agent.
Yeah, you know. Mystic Birth, I feel like. Yeah, just, I'm actually his agent. I just thought I'd bring that one out there. I'm Luka Dino's agent. But yeah, I think Koundé will be a Chelsea player at some point. I think that's not going away. It seems like he wants to move to us, and it's the move that we need. We need a big centre, well, need a big target, a big centre back. So it'll be brilliant. Obviously, he's only 5'10", which people are moaning about still. But look, Aspilicueta is only 5'9", 5'10". It doesn't matter about size, I think, as long as you're a good enough defender, which I think he is. And he threw a ball at Jordi Alba's face, which is always really funny to watch.
I mean, he's ruled him out for the season, you know.
It was very, very malicious. But yeah, I think that's a great move for us if we can get him in January, especially. What are the ones? I think the one that's sort of the sour one, I think it hasn't worked out for us and him, and he has been quite dreadful. I thought he was very good against Brentford, don't get me wrong, and I think against Wolves, he was actually quite good as well when he came on. I think that is one where I think we actually need him for the season just to make up the numbers, because if we didn't have him against Wolves, who God knows who would have brought on. So I think we should keep him to the end of the season, not necessarily play him, but I think it'd be a good player to have on the bench at least. It's a name, isn't it?
Yeah, especially in the current circumstances, never know week in, week out, really.
Yeah, and another one that actually caught my eye was the Neves one. I think that would be a brilliant move for
us. I think
Chris has mentioned that before as well, and I think that would be a really, really good move because he's quite creative. He is a deep-lying playmaker, but he's very, very creative. And he's got that killer pass. He played one against Brighton the other week, and I think Sace put it in the back of the net. It's a fantastic ball. I think it'd be someone that could really slot into Chelsea perfectly. So I think that'd be a very good move for us. And he wouldn't be too expensive as well. So, yeah, that'd be a good move.
That's possible. What are you thinking, Chris, on that and maybe something else in the news?
Yeah, the Ruben Neves one, I think, would be exciting, I think, if we got him. Because I think he just adds something a bit different. It's the range of passing that I think he adds. He's very good short and long, which will help us to unlock more defences. But the main thing as well with him is he's got an incredible shot from outside the box.
Yeah, we might actually get a goal from outside the box once. We might.
Yeah, well, I've seen people saying, and they're right actually, that one of our problems is the fact that we don't actually shoot from outside the box. So we allow teams to drop in and defend so deep because they never have to push out to close people down on the edge of the box. They can just stay in the shape knowing that we're going to pass it sideways or backwards at some point. I do think if you've got someone like him who can unleash a shot from that range, it does make defenders question whether they'll need to leave their position to close him down.
You're not happy with Rudiger doing that?
No, I'm not happy with Rudiger doing that.
I found out who the current, which current Premier League player has the most goals from outside the box. I was shocked at who it is. It's not a Chelsea player, obviously.
I reckon it'll be someone like someone obscure, like someone like James Ward-Prowse, because he's got a lot of free kicks.
It's not him. Striker.
Harry Kane.
Yeah, Harry Kane.
Yeah,
I couldn't quite believe that. I thought, has he ever scored a goal outside the box? What?
I think he's scored quite a fair few. There was
but I have no memory.
The one season where Spurs were really good, but actually he didn't win anything and finished second. He scored a fair few outside the box.
Yeah, he did.
The bit from, I saw something that, obviously I didn't include it, but it's on about left-backs, was Teo Hernandez. And I'm sorry to break everyone's hearts. He's not coming to be second or backup or whatever. He is one of the best in the world right now. And I don't see why he'd go from Milan, who are doing pretty decent, or they're doing more than decent, to then go and sit behind Chilwell. He's only going to come in if he knows, oh, I'm number one ahead of Chilwell, which is probably very likely. But
The Luka Dinje move would be a good move, though, especially if it's a January one, because doesn't need to settle. Which I think
wants out. They don't want him.
I think that could be the problem with Koundé in January, though. It's a risky move. I mean, because he's going to take the rest of the season really to settle in. So in one way, it could be good because then he'll be ready for next season. He would have already had like 6 months. League experience when we don't need him as much if Rudiger and everyone's still around, and then next season he should be ready to be a starter. So it could work out that way, or it could be if you come in and try and force him to be a starter straight away, the pressure will be on him again come the end of the season. So it'd just be how we manage that situation, I think.
It's not going to be too long till we'll be looking at that January transfer window, so it'll be interesting. This week, though, we had a very youthful Chelsea 11. They took on Brentford in the quarterfinal stage of the energy drink I've never drunk and have no plans to ever cup. Well, our academy lads, though, they were certainly full of energy. We left Brentford Community Stadium with a huge smile on our faces by winning 2-0. Now, many a talking point, positive for a change. Even Saul had a positive game. That's great. Good on him. What did you make of it, though? What the overall performance, guys?
Brilliant. I feared for the worst, I must admit. When I saw the team sheet, I was happy. I loved the team sheet. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you just said.
Yeah, but I thought, oh, this is going to be 3-4-0. And I wouldn't have judged Tuchel or any of the players if they'd have lost 3 or 4-0. But it was actually a really good professional performance. I thought all the youngsters did really well. I thought Sal did really well. I thought Kepa was fantastic. I think he got man of the match as well, which is deserved, much deserved. And I think it's a real positive that we came out of that game and won the game. I thought when Kante and Reece James came on, they just looked so, so good. And I don't think there was many negatives. I thought Barkley was quite poor.
He didn't look very good, did he?
Yeah, I think he's just the most frustrating player in the world. You can see he's talented. You can see he's really a talented player, but too many times where his decision-making lets him down or his end product isn't good enough. And you can see why fans get so frustrated at Villa, fans are frustrated with him at Everton. And it's one of them where Ross Barkley's own worst enemy is himself. And like, it's so frustrating to watch a player that you know has the talent, but just cannot produce it. But other than that, I thought we were fantastic. And to keep a clean sheet is a real, real positive. And the young lads, Harvey Vale, I thought, was superb. I think he was the pick out of the young lads for me. I thought he was really, really good. The pockets of space that he got into, the passes, the little touches, looked so confident on the ball, and none of them looked out of place. And yeah, just a real, real good performance.
Yeah, Harvey Vale did have a solid debut, I must admit. I mean, he seems to be like more suited to like the attacking mid role more than the winger, but that like his lack of speed. That's just my view. It's my first time properly seeing him play, so my opinion not really worth judging because I haven't really seen him. So it's sort of like a eyesight test sort of thing. But yeah. What did you think, though, Chris, of maybe Harvey Vale and obviously the game?
Well, I thought the performance was excellent. I think I said, it seems not so long ago now, but I think it was only Monday, wasn't it, when we did the Wolves game?
Yes.
Yeah. I think I said then that Wolves game, although we didn't win it, we looked more like back to ourselves. And it looked like we'd sort of started to turn the corner. It was a much improved performance against Wolves than we'd seen in previous weeks in terms of controlling the game. And I thought we carried that on. We never really looked overly in danger in the game. Brentford had a couple of dangerous attacks, mainly from crosses, but we did have a lack of height in the defence. So that was always going to cause us a problem. But in general play, we didn't actually look overly troubled like we was ever going to lose the game, which I think again is another massive positive that it does look like we are getting back to somewhere near the level we was at before. Still not creating a lot, but I thought before we get on to the young lads, because I imagine we're going to talk about them in depth in a minute, I think there was a few players who deserve some mentions. I thought Kepa was one. He looked solid, but he looked confident, to be honest. It almost looks like he's happier being number two. So it's took all the pressure off him and he's just coming in and playing his game whenever he gets a chance. I thought Chalobah was excellent in the middle of that back three. I think he's played him there once before and we all said that he didn't have his best game. So I did worry when I saw that, but he was excellent. Azpilicueta, last two games, looks like the Azpilicueta we've all known for so long, back to somewhere near his best. And I thought Saul was really good throughout the whole game. Controlled the game from that midfield. Excellent passing.
He was quite calm and composed, wasn't he?
Yeah, he put a couple of balls out of play when he tried to find Alonso. But I think one of them was a mix-up where he tried to play it to Alonso's feet and Alonso had actually run in behind. And then the other one he just misjudged. But he was trying to make things happen. I don't mind someone giving the ball away if they're trying to make something happen. But I thought for someone who looked like his Chelsea career was never going to start and it was over before he even started, the last couple of games he's looked like he's starting to settle a bit more, getting a bit more used to the sort of pace of the English league. I wouldn't say he's anywhere near starting still when everyone's fit, but I agree with what Berth said really in the news section about, I do think it would be a mistake to send him back now, because it's almost pointless, everything we've done with him to this point, to then just send him back when he looks like he could at least be useful as a squad player.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on Kepa. I mean, a really impressive game, key saves. I watched him back as well, and, you know, wow. He kept us in that game. I mean, is he the best backup goalkeeper in the league?
He's the most expensive. I hope he's the best backup keeper in the league. But I think Chris is so right that he looks more comfortable as a number two. He looks better as a number two. It's almost as if, because the pressure's not on him now as much, that he can sort of relax a lot more, and he's sort of not trying too hard to overcomplicate things. And he does just look a better keeper now, because I thought he was really good against Zenit as well. And I thought he actually kept us in the game.
See, the only one that comes to mind that could maybe rival him, and I don't even think could say rival, would be Henderson at United.
Yeah. But then I thought he was massively overrated that year at Sheffield United, to be honest. I think it's easier, as stupid as it sounds, I think it's easier for a goalkeeper to look good at a worse team. Because they have so many shots.
They're
going to make more saves. Whereas I think the better teams you play for, it's harder to be a goalkeeper, because you have to concentrate, and you might only have two saves to make a game. And if you make a mistake on one of them, you don't have any other saves to make up for it. And people will just say, "Hey, it was poor, made a mistake, led to a goal." Whereas at Sheffield United, if you let that first shot in and it's a mistake, he'd probably make seven saves after that, and everyone would go, "Oh yeah, he made up for it though." You don't get that at big clubs. So I would say Kepa probably is, but I still think he's being judged on what he was like the before money, yeah. rather than what he's actually like now.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. One player that is worth at least 70 million, double, and N'Golo Kanté. I think one of the most frustrating takes recently I've seen on social media is that we can't play attacking football when he's in the side. I mean, he's the best player in our side by a mile at the moment. I mean, I know we've touched on other players that have done well, like Reece James and Chalobah and Rudiger, but one of the best 10 players in the world, maybe, when he's fit. I mean, he can do it all, can't he? I mean, the key word there, obviously, is when he's fit. However, when he came onto the pitch, the difference in quality was just obvious to anyone. You know, it's as simple as that. And whoever says we need to sell him or not extend his deal are nuts. Certain hosts of popular podcasts. Not wouldn't be this one, would it?
That's what I'm saying. No.
Someone I see in the mirror daily might have said it, but he has been amazing, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's so,
if he could stay fit.
So good. Like, I mean, I think people, for me, I've said it before, I'll say it again. For me, I'd put him now above Makélélé and Essien for Chelsea, because I think he can do so much. Just look at that running for the Champions League last year. How good was he? And then every time he plays, he's just unbelievable. He's everywhere. He can play wherever you want him to. He can probably do a job at left back if he needs him to. It's just, he is so, so good. And the thing I will say about Twitter, Chelsea Twitter and football Twitter in general is, don't listen to anyone on there. Make up your own opinion. Because I saw something earlier, for instance, that Messi never scored in any big games, and that he was like just a tapping merchant. That's Lionel Messi, by the way. So that's the sort of thing that you see on Twitter. And look, yeah, N'Golo Kanté does have problems with his injuries now. He's getting on a bit. But when he comes in, I don't think there's anyone in world football that can do what he can.
Yeah. No, I think that's spot on. What do you think, Chris?
I think Tuchel's actually made him a better player. I think what I would say is I think Lampard deserves some credit, because I think he started to do it with Kanté, playing him in that sort of outside right centre mid position. But he looks so much better on the ball now. Which was something that I criticised him heavily for, that for all of his good work defensively, he was so bad on the ball that he would cost you a lot in terms of giving the ball away, and he'd kill counter-attacks with a bad pass. But, I mean, even his dribbling seems to have improved a lot. I mean, he's going past players now like a winger. I just think he has been, every time I've seen him this season, he's been outstanding. It's just such a shame that he can't stay fit.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it really is. We'll touch away from the current squad. We'll look at the next generation. We had, obviously, Harvey Vale, we had Soon Suk Bell and Xavi Simmons. Not that one. They're in the 11. What did you make of their debuts?
I thought they were all really, really good. obviously, they're not quite there yet. They're not the finished article by any means, but they didn't look out of place. I thought they all did their job really well. Like I said earlier, I thought Harvey Vowell was the pick of them. I thought Harvey Vowell looked really, really confident on the ball, looked to make things happen, and he's really, really intelligent. I think he reminded me how Mount was when he first came into the team, sort of like far more intelligent than his age shows. So I think the future's bright at Chelsea. I think we must have the best academy in the world, or at least top three, surely.
Yeah, I think it's now up there with like the likes of Ajax and Dinamo Zagreb, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, we are just so fantastic. And, you know, that's only three of them that played. We've got a whole crop of them now coming through. And I'm sure those three and a few others will probably get more chances as far as the season goes. And even next year, that they'll get more chances. So, look, they look really, really good. And the future is very bright at Chelsea.
I mean, there's clearly a genuine path to the senior squad. It's obviously, come about because of the situation, but still, you know, as they say, if you're good enough, you're old enough. And
but the thing is, I think, you know, Lampard, again, has to have credit for this, because I think if Sarri had stayed at Chelsea, Mount wouldn't have got a chance. Abraham wouldn't have got a chance. I know he's gone now, but Reece James wouldn't have got a chance. And now these players are genuine, like, class Reece James is one of the best in his position in the world. These are the chances that they're getting now. Before Lampard, no one was getting a chance. And now players like Harvey Vowell are getting chances, and, you know, Xavi Simmons are getting chances. Mm. And it's like, this wouldn't have happened before our transfer ban, which I think was a blessing in disguise. Yeah. People look at Chelsea before that and thought, they just said every young player, they don't give any youth a chance. But now we do. And now the youth is sort of our main core of the squad, main core of the starting 11. So there's a definite path now to the first team, definitely.
Before I bring Chris in, you said about Harvey Bell being the standout. Maybe in that game, I'd say maybe long term, keep an eye on June Bell, because he's doing really well. Jude Soonsuk Bell. He got 19 last season. He's already got 5 this season. And, you know, he's a decent centre forward. He signed a new contract of this current year. He doesn't turn 18 till next month. But, you know, he's got a contract till 23. And he was called up by Frank Lampard to train him. And he's pretty, you know, I think he might have something in him. I kept an eye this week, obviously, after he made his debut, on some of his highlights from last season. And yeah, I could. He really has the potential to be a decent forward. I mean, you never know, because obviously it's one of them things. But it's certainly exciting. We've got such a great plethora of academy graduates coming up. I mean, what did you make of their debuts, Chris?
I think one of the main things would be, I think Thomas Tuchel showed how much of a good coach he is. The fact that these players had 2 days training with the first team, and tactically they didn't look out of place. That's credit to them, but also Tuchel's coaching, that he has managed to get them up to speed so quickly, especially tactically, which is normally what you don't see with younger players. They normally, like, some of them come in and they have good games in terms of what they do technically, but tactically you can always pick holes in what they was doing. But I didn't see that from them. I thought Vial and Soonsuk Bell linked up really well in the forward areas. Movement was really good. Couple of little bits of play in and around the edge of the box that didn't quite come off, but you could see that the ideas was there. But I thought Simmons, actually, I think he went a little bit unnoticed in the game. Rico Henry did get wrong side of him a few times, but that does happen in this formation. Like, it happens to Reece James a lot. It happened to Aspilicueta when he's played out there, because of how high and wide they have to push. There's going to be space in behind them. But he showed great recovery pace every time to get back in and at least put pressure on. So it wasn't an easy chance. But I thought he had good use of the ball. He linked up well. I think he could be a real option for when we want to rest Reece James. I think he'd almost a better option in that position than Aspilicueta, which we've said before completely changes how you're going to play, because Aspilicueta is not as comfortable in midfield areas. He can't go inside as much. He's not as quick. So I think Simmons going forward, I think he's the one who's more likely to get more first team chances just because of the position he plays. But I thought all three of them deserve massive credit for playing with a maturity that's beyond their years, really.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I really like that, actually, that take on it. That could be a really good point to keep an eye on going forward. There's going to be more academy graduates. I think we have to keep remembering as well that most of these lads are not even 18 yet. And if they're taking against senior pros, I mean, that Brentford squad was pretty strong, that lineup. I'd say it was.
I think on your point as well, Berth, about the pathway now to the first team, I think we almost needed the transfer ban.
It
forced us to play players like Mount and James and Abraham. But I think they deserve credit as well, because I think if they'd come in and failed, I don't think
we'd be
in our academy being used. But I think almost the board looked at it and went, well, these academy lads can come in and do it. So I think now you will see more chances being given, and the board won't be as comfortable just throwing money at a problem without using the academy first.
You know, I think people like Petrček, they are a main sort of catalyst for this sort of thing. I think they're very influential on like the academy getting into the first team. I think with people like that, and like with Jody Morris and Frank Lampard back in the day when they were at Chelsea, I think they were sort of really good at getting the academy players into the first team, sort of making them feel as if like they were good enough. And I think now all the academy do firmly believe that they are good enough for the first team. And I think before, there's always that doubt in like people's minds. And you could probably see why he doesn't really want to go to Bayern Munich, because he thought, well, I'm just not going to get a chance in the first team. I'm on the bench all the time. I'm not getting played. Why am I not getting played? When I have started, I've been really good. So now the attitude has changed in that youth setup, and that can only be a good thing for Chelsea.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point to end it on. I mean, Spurs are in the semi-finals. It's our third semi-final in less than a year, which that's outstanding. I must admit, that's pretty impressive. And I do go on about it, but never forget that a year ago today, Christmas Eve, Thomas Tuchel was sacked. On Christmas Eve, they sacked him. And what's happened since? Well, did PSG go and win the title? Nope. Tuchel has two trophies, Champions League and the Super Cup. And he's pretty happy. UEFA Coach of the Year. It's not gone too bad for them.
I'm really gutted for them, and I'm really glad we've got Tuchel in charge of us.
Yeah, for sure. Spurs, what are you thinking?
Them as a whole, or the actual title?
In the semi-finals, sorry. Do you think they're going to go all out? Probably will. It's Conte.
I think they will. Conte always seems to put a strong team into these competitions. I remember him doing it at Chelsea, and I do think they'll want to win a trophy. It's going to be tough. Chris mentioned it in the group chat the other day, that kind of hoped that the second leg was at Stamford Bridge instead of the first, and I agree with him. I wish it was, but I think we're good enough to beat this Spurs side. I don't think we need to be scared of them. I don't think they're quite there yet. Conte has improved them, but I don't think we should be too worried. And our players back. So I'm hoping it's going to be tight. It's going to be tight, but I think we will just get past them.
It's only 2 weeks away. Less than that. I mean, it's a week next Tuesday. So that's going to be interesting. 5th of Jan. What are you thinking, Chris?
Well, like I said, I think this was the hardest tie we could get. Like, I don't think... I mean, we have a terrible record against Arsenal lately, so you would say Arsenal on the face of it and Liverpool are Liverpool, but I don't think Arsenal and Liverpool would have took it as seriously as Tottenham will. I think Conte will go first team, which will either mean if Tuchel can play a rotated side and then it makes it a difficult game, or it might force Tuchel to play first team when we could be fighting on different fronts at the same time. So it's going to be tough. I think if we take it seriously in terms of team selection, you don't know who's going to be available, but if it's a strong team that he picks, then we can beat Spurs. There's no doubt about that.
Do you know why I think he'll go strong? Because this is how fixtures play out. It's January 2nd, Liverpool at home. Ooh. Then the first tie on the Wednesday against Tottenham. Then it's the FA Cup against Chesterfield. And then the second leg. I think the first leg will go probably quite strong, depending on how Chelsea-Liverpool played out. Then you've got the FA Cup, then you've got the second leg, and then you've got City away, and then Spurs at home in the Premier League. So before we fly off to wherever the Club World Cup's being hosted, I've completely forgot. But yes, so...
I think he'll go strong first leg, and hopefully we can get a good lead in the first leg.
You'd like to hope. I mean, you really would. Yeah. An early Christmas present, if you want to see something that make you go, ooh, Jorginho's turn coming up to the 90th minute from the game.
Very nice.
It's worth looking at, I promise. Before we sign off, you might be wondering, where's the Villa preview? Well, we have no idea if that game's even going ahead. It's one of them. Before we sign off, though, it's time to find out who that former Blue is. At the start, though, I said that he was not born in December. So he's born in one of the other 11 months of the year. Oh, narrowing it down. He was part of the iconic 04-05 Premier League winning squad. He played in the 02 World Cup and Euro 2004. He's played with Pauleta, Dugarry and Danny Murphy twice. I'm going to give you some extra clues. He played with Pauleta and Dugarry at Bordeaux. He played with Danny Murphy at Fulham and Charlton. And I must admit, when I wrote that clue out, I instantly thought Scott Parker because of Fulham and Charlton. And I was like, he didn't play at Bordeaux. If you haven't got it off that, you're going to love this one. He was captain of his country. In March 2009. I said he was part of the iconic squad. I didn't say he was an iconic player. Right. This one, if you might guess it because of the country. In March 2009, he was elected as an MP in the, I hope this is the right pronunciation, the Altai region of Russia.
Right. Is it? I think I might know who it is, but I feel like he didn't play for these teams. No, I don't know. I really don't know. The only Russian I can think of. Go on. Alexei Smertin.
Correct. That is right. Yes. He did. He had a career. He go from before Chelsea. We signed him from Bordeaux. He then went on loan to Portsmouth. And then he went on loan to... He played for us in the 05-06. But then he went on loan to Charlton. And then finished up at Fulham. And... It's on it. It says 04-05. He has that Premier League medal because obviously that was the only season he properly played for us. He also has a Russian Cup and a Coupe de la Ligue with Bordeaux. So, he didn't really do much. I guess he was one of those signings because,
not the most memorable player, is he?
No, he's very forgettable. That's why I couldn't get him. I completely forgot about him. And let's face it, after he left Chelsea, I definitely forgot about him.
He was captain of Russia, so, you know.
I did not know that, though.
Yeah, he was. Fair play to him. Look, we've come to the end of another episode of At The Bridge Pod. As always, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram if you do not already follow us, and you can find us by searching for at The Bridge Pod. We're glad that you've spent your time. You probably aren't listening to this on Christmas Eve, but if you are, Merry Christmas. Have a great one and Boxing Day. If the game's going ahead, even better. We can watch it from comfort of our sofas, all warm and safe. So, till then, till next week, listeners, that is us signing off.